Hello, everyone, and welcome to PodRocket, a web development podcast brought to you by LogRocket. LogRocket helps software teams to improve user experience with session replay, error tracking, and product analytics. Try it for free at logrocket.com. Hey, everybody. I am Paige Niedringhaus. I am a software engineer at Blues, an IoT company, and I am your host today for the PodRocket podcast. So today we have Delba Oliveira, a developer advocate at Vercel, and Wyatt Johnson, a software engineer at Vercel, here to talk about partial pre-rendering in Next.js. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Absolutely. We're very happy to have you on, and I would love to dive just straight into it. Can you explain to us a little bit about the concept of pre-rendering in Next.js and how it differs from dynamic and static rendering that most developers are probably familiar with today?
Yeah, for sure. I think it helps to think about where your application code can be rendered. So we have client-side rendering and we have server-side rendering. And on the server, you can have dynamic rendering, but you can also have pre-rendering. So with dynamic rendering, a good way to think about it is you're rendering on demand for every user request, and you're sending that response back to the client. With pre-rendering, or as we like to also call it, static rendering, you're doing the work ahead of time, and then you're caching it. And the reason why we cache it is because some pages don't benefit from dynamic rendering. For example, blogs or static marketing pages. So we can save a lot of resources by doing the work ahead of time and then caching it. Now, the downside of pre-rendering is that you lose the personalization aspect of it. So if you need to render based on user or headers or cookies, you're not able to do that because you need to access request time information at runtime. So that's the difference between static and dynamic rendering or pre-rendering.
That's excellent. Wyatt, do you have anything that you'd like to add to that? I think Delba did a great job, if you don't.
Yeah, I think that was pretty comprehensive, to be honest.
All right. So one of the things that I looked at to kind of prep for this podcast was a great video that you did about partial pre-rendering and how Next.js 14 has introduced it as a new feature. So in the talk, you talked a little bit about how in the past, web frameworks were either server-side or client-side. How did this approach create challenges for developers, and what were some of the common workarounds that they might have done in the past?
In the past, frameworks and libraries, they used to serve one paradigm, which meant that if you wanted to create an application that fulfilled all your needs, you often had to split your architecture between different frameworks. So like, for example, your blog or your marketing page could be in WordPress. If you had a dynamic dashboard, you might use React or Ember or Angular just to get that interactivity on the client side. And if you had something that was quite dynamic, like an e-commerce site, you might even opt for things like PHP or Rails. The type of application you built was very much tied to the library or the language that you used, which often meant that if you wanted to create a joint experience, you had to connect everything with subdomains. And you can see that creates a huge burden for developers and teams because now you're having to work across languages and you're having to share things like code, UI, styles, and make sure that everything is consistent. While I was talking to Wyatt about this, he actually had a great example about WordPress.
Yeah, I suppose that like when you're thinking about how you can leverage the most of the framework that you're using, when you're thinking about how WordPress applies the rendering paradigms, like when you run WordPress on a server, it's not often you just have WordPress. You're always throwing something like Varnish in front of it. You're always throwing something, some CDN in front of it. And it's always responsible for cache management and validation. In a lot of cases, you'll have plugins that are responsible for invalidating that data. So it's, I mean, developers are already aware that static is fast because we want to serve things to the users as quickly as possible, because a page that takes long to load is not going to sell a lot of products. It's not going to attract a lot of views. It's not going to make people want to navigate across your site more. And especially on pages where the internet connection is poor, you want to make sure that you get that to them as quickly as possible in that small sliver of time they had that cellular reception to get what they needed. And just thinking about that, I think, meant that this huge burden of trying to understand all these layers that are responsible for just serving a blog to your users and making that useful to them.
Very interesting. So How did Next.js try and address the limitations of the single paradigm frameworks? What advantages did it offer in terms of rendering diversity?
Before we created the app router, we had the pages router, and the typical way of rendering and providing data to those pages was through get static props. This served us very well for a very long time, and it solved one of the biggest problems was how do we provide data to pages that we want to render using the very familiar React component framework, but we want to be able to do it in a way that allows us to render out all these static outputs. This introduced a few problems that we were able to address in a few ways through the app router system, which essentially allowed us to move a lot of the data fetching deeper into the component tree to allow us to be a little bit more dynamic with how the components are structured and connected. So instead of us having to think about loading all the data that's necessary for the entire tree of all of the components that are necessary, now we can just have each component request specific pieces of data that they need to do. So when you're trying to think about on a per page basis how we're supposed to handle this, now we're thinking on a per component basis, and that sort of shifts the mental model into a more familiar space that a lot of developers are more comfortable with.
Yeah, and to add to that as well, I do like the journey of going from having to choose a rendering model or paradigm at the app level, and then with Next.js, the pages router, now you could do it per page level, so you didn't have to go across systems just to have a different rendering model. And now with PPR, what's exciting about it is that you can have components that are static and components that are dynamic at the singular page level. I think that's how it can help developers, because now you're not having to learn different systems to achieve something that should be quite simple for your developers to work with.
So that's one question that I've always had in the back of my mind is, now that there are things like suspense and you can very carefully choose which pieces of content you want to update, do you have any tips or advice for developers on knowing what they should actually wrap in suspense contexts, especially for somebody who's less familiar with React or is just trying to start with a Next.js app? Do you have any tips for like how to identify those components and know what should be static versus what should be dynamic?
I think it really depends on the UI state and like what you think you want to present to users. And I think that's what's really cool about suspense boundaries, the entire concept, and especially as we begin to enter a world with a partial pre-rendering, is that the suspense boundaries give you an opportunity to create very concrete and explicit loading states or fallback states when the data is being requested or when the components need to suspend for one reason or another. And I think, again, this mental model shifts between us having to manage this is loading state and all these little interstitial bits across the application. Because let's pretend like server rendering isn't a thing for just a moment, and all we had was client rendering. Typically in a React application, you send all the JavaScript bundles to a user, the browser loads all this up, it starts to make network requests, fetch requests to get all the data it needs to load on the page. Now you're thinking, okay, all these loading screens, all these loading things are popping up. But what's great about suspense boundaries is that instead of you having to think about retrieving all this data as soon as the JavaScript loads, we're already getting the data by the time the user is getting these loading states. So it's actually just shifting, it's reducing the burden and the complexity that's necessary to create and load the data and create these sort of loading states for users. And it's just presenting them with the opportunity to think about, okay, I know I need to retrieve this data. What should I show to the user while this data is being retrieved? Really, you should think about creating those suspense boundaries in areas where you think it's valuable to provide the user with sort of an intermediary experience. That's not to say that if I'm loading a stream of comments, I want every single comment to load as their individual suspense boundary. That's a bit much. But loading the whole comment stream once we've retrieved all that information, now that's like a loading experience that a lot of people can get behind.
Yeah. Wyatt mentioned in the case of async operations, like data fetching, but I also think there's a case for using suspense for the dynamic parts, which ties into PPR. Like, for example, in Next.js, we have what we call dynamic APIs. These are headers, cookies, things that you can't know a build time and you need to know runtime or request time. So when you use those things, and you know, okay, this is going to de-opt my page into dynamic rendering, suspense is almost kind of like what contains the virus from spreading, as I like to call it, where you're basically saying, okay, from the boundary app, I want everything to be static. And then just inside this component, there's a dynamic part that we can render or postpone and stream in once it's ready.
Okay, so let's dive a little bit more into that. Can you talk us through how partial pre-rendering works from the server side and the client side perspectives?
Yeah, so when you think about on the server exactly, like who's responsible for what when you're rendering a particular page, what we do with Next.js is we perform an initial render of that page where we're trying to go through the entire component tree until we reach these points where dynamic APIs are invoked. Mm-hmm. This would be like cookies or headers or a fetch call that can't be cached. At that point, that's when it sort of throws an error that propagates up to the nearest boundary. We create this sort of suspensed, postponed hole that will be filled in with that dynamic content as it loads in later. So from the perspective of what is the server responsible for at this point, it gets broken up into two steps. Because typically, before PPR, once it encountered one of those dynamic APIs, it turned the entire page into a dynamic response, which admittedly will work for a lot of users. But the problem was that it meant that the user is stuck waiting for that Lambda to invoke, that code to run in the server to be able to serve anything. And what we learned is that static is fast, because static just needs to be pulled out of cache, tossed to the user. So we want to get that static content as quickly as possible. So from the server perspective, we've pre-rendered up to all those boundaries to create all the static content. And anything that's inside those suspense boundaries that require dynamic APIs, those are the things that can be streamed in later and are resumed and sent to the client afterwards and streamed in. That like answers our like server side experience, and that like when you navigate to a page, not only are we going to serve you all the HTML for that static shell, but now we're going to stream in all the dynamic parts afterwards, which meant that the user gets that full homepage experience. And then we stream in the little user logged in icon at the top right hand corner of the screen, which means that you get really fast response times, which means you get really that layout paints as quickly as possible. You're getting CSS loading, fonts loading, and that solves a lot of big problems that a lot of users had when we think about dynamic APIs being used. And when you do client navigations, it gets even more interesting, because now we are able to prefetch a lot of these static shells and static assets as a part of these different pages that you navigate to. When a user clicks on a link, we can just start to stream in the dynamic data that will fill in all those holes in the page. So when you click the link, you can immediately go into that next static shell for that page, and the dynamic data starts to stream in. Really, partial pre-rendering isn't about completely changing the mental model. It's about creating this transparent improvement to the experience of the user so that they can get and see something quicker and more efficiently.
Yeah, I like what you said about the client side as well, because I think that's key and very important, is that you send in the first response and then the client and the server can work in parallel. While the server streaming in the dynamic parts, the client can then also start downloading and passing those resources. Another thing as well, and maybe Wyatt can talk more about it, is that all of this is happening behind the scenes, but also React is doing the work of gluing everything together on the client, which to me seems like magic, but I'm sure there's more to it as well.
Yes, Next.js isn't doing anything particularly out of this world crazy. Like Next.js itself hasn't done this heavy lifting. This is all React APIs that other JavaScript frameworks can utilize and import. These are things that we're, you know, working with the React team to be able to improve those APIs to make the experiences really smooth and finding bugs and resolving those edge cases. It's just really amazing to see how React is introducing those new paradigms, because React itself provides this. Right now, it's called an unstable postpone that allows components to mark that they have to need to postpone because we want to propagate that up to a new suspense boundary because that content needs to load.
And I think another underrated thing as well is React's streaming abilities, because all of this is working with streaming. Like if you think about the major sites that we have today, like YouTube, Spotify, Facebook, when you first land on the page, you will notice that they do serve a static shell or a layout that you can interact with. And then they stream the rest of the content. So they stream the songs or they stream the videos. And that's something that these big companies are having to implement themselves. So what is nice about partial pre-rendering is that now with React, we can leverage React streaming capabilities so that developers can implement these patterns without the complexity. So yeah, I'm very excited about all of this, not because of partial pre-rendering, but because I know that React will enable so many different things with the new APIs, and partial pre-rendering is just one of those things.
If I'm understanding this correctly, it sounds a lot like partial pre-rendering is just making it easier for developers to give users the kind of experience that they've come to expect, where there isn't necessarily all the content that you want on a page as soon as you land on it, but there is stuff to interact with. There's things to see. There's not just a loading spinner. And then as it becomes available and the client gets what it needs, it quickly fills in those gaps. Is that how I should think about it?
Yeah, I think React has come a long way from when we started using it to build applications, like the whole single page application. You know, you're familiar for you to like land on a page, you have this white screen where you see nothing, and then the JavaScript pops in, and then they start filling in all the gaps, and everything starts to pop in. It starts to do fetch calls, and the data starts flowing in. And then Next.js, we introduced server rendering, where now we're trying to build pre-render a lot of this content in the server and send it to the user. But you have to make those decisions of, does it require dynamic APIs? Do we need to look at the user's headers? Is it an authenticated request? Like all these things, all these additional requirements for application developers that often required them to make a lot of decisions ahead of time as to like, oh, do I have to provide an API for this so I can request it on the client? So instead of us doing the server side, what are we going to do? And when you think about how we're trying to manifest this in terms of the data fetching paradigms, is like now, you know, the round trips between the client and the server become all these extra hops that have to happen. It's not just between the origin server and the database, which is already typically expensive. Now you have client to server to database, but by shortening that and having a lot more of this work be completed at the server and sending that static content to the user immediately, the user's not left waiting. The data is being retrieved as quickly as it can, and we're sending the most minimal stuff down to the client so that it's responsible for just presenting what it needs to for the user. So from that perspective, it just means that users get what they need faster. They can start to experience that page, and developers don't have to make all these mental choices as to like how to enable this behavior. React and Next provide that experience really cleanly in a very easy to understand paradigm.
That sounds fantastic. I'm all for that. So what are some of the implementation considerations or best practices that developers should keep in mind if they want to get started using pre-rendering?
Next.js with AppRouter introduced this concept of these loading JS files that can be added at different segments. And what a lot of people might not understand is that these are actually just suspense boundaries that will automatically wrap around those page segments. So if you're already using loading boundaries today, you're already starting to make those thoughts in your head about, okay, if this page needs to load, what do I show to the user? And those loading boundaries are an excellent way to sort of visualize and understand that. But you, of course, can take that further by using and including those suspense boundaries around those dynamic APIs, being a little bit more explicit or more granular around different components, because oftentimes your application isn't structured solely under these segments that create the paths. It's structured with all these components that could be embedded and can be composed. And that's the magic of React components when you think about it. And so by leveraging this sort of co-location behavior that is provided to you with async components and be able to fetch data right inside the component, not use effect, just call fetch right away, thinking about using those suspense boundaries to create those elements of dynamicness that appear into the page. So again, you want to be able to think about what experience do you want to give to your users? And it's a lot less about how do I make the framework do exactly what I want to do, which is like, it feels like you're just empowering the developer experience more through that.
Yeah.
And Delva probably has some more context on that too.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned the idea of loading or fallback UI. And I think that's a very important consideration when you're designing UI for streaming, because you need to be very mindful about how your user is going to consume it. It does pay off to take time to think about the design of your loading skeletons and making sure that when the real UI comes in, that you're not having, for example, layout shift. And you can see, I know we mentioned like these big websites before, but you can see that they do it very well. And it's just a very simple swap. So you just need to be mindful of how you're designing your fallback UI. I think Wyatt also mentioned data fetching, and perhaps this is going to be the biggest shift because React developers are very familiar with things like use context or fetching data globally and then props drilling it down. And then this new model, it's encouraged that you fetch data where you need it. Then you might come across the question, which is, what about things like waterfalls and how do you solve for those? And that's where React's cache function comes in, because you can dedupe the requests so that you're only making a single request. And you can also choose to preload important data. So there are new patterns, I would say, that we need to spend time learning and getting used to. But I think that once you understand how it works, it really does make more sense. And it feels a lot more composable compared to some of the older patterns that we are used to.
I think just like also just fun to note is that when we introduced AppRouter, that was a lot of mental shifts around how we structured applications. And I think partial pre-rendering isn't really about trying to create all these huge mental shifts. What it's trying to do is provide you with better knobs and a smoother experience so that we just give you a more optimized user experience for the users trying to visit your sites and a simpler mental model when it comes to trying to understand how to structure the application. Because now you don't have to think about, okay, API or do I create this using inside the components?
Yeah, I remember when React Server Components first came out and Next.js announced them and how much of a massive shift it was for everybody. Suddenly use clients at the top of all of my files that never needed it before. It sounds like pre-rendering is just smoothing that path and that transition between React Server Components and client-side components. So we've talked a little bit about how pre-rendering is working and being added into Next.js now. What are some of the things that you see in the future for it? What kind of improvements or what directions do you see it taking?
Not a lot of people understand exactly how the app routers, like segments, are structured and how we render them. And one of the upsides to the way that we've structured it and the way that they're rendered in the server is that a lot of these segments can be rendered in parallel. And parallel rendering actually gives you like a really interesting benefit when it comes to trying to understand how different layouts and different segments can share content or share page information. That becomes really interesting when you think about partial pre-rendering, because now different pages could have their static shells pre-rendered in a way that allows you to navigate to a particular page. You can think about an example of if I'm building a large shopping website that has hundreds of thousands of products. And typically when you're thinking about running this in Next.js, you think about, okay, well, I want it the best experience for my users. I want them to navigate to pages extremely quickly. So I'm going to pre-generate all these pages. But of course, the more and more products you have, the more and more blog posts you have, the more and more news articles you have, that takes a long time to pre-generate all those pages, which provides a poor DX experience. But in a lot of cases, a lot of these layouts, a lot of these experiences, actually sharing common layouts. They're sharing other common elements to those pages. So what we're looking at doing is trying to expand that model of these sort of shared different segments and trying to understand how we can use the new advantages provided by partial pre-rendering to allow us to suspend parts of the page to be able to fill it in later and as it streams in, so that you navigate from one product that was maybe really popular and you go click products like this and you click that one, but no one's visited that product since you've done a last deploy. Typically, you'd click that and it has to like create that static shell for that page and then serve out that content, serve in the dynamic stuff. And that's not fantastic. So as a part of trying to expand and like continue down this route of improving the experience to the end users, we're trying to find ways to send those sort of like intermediate shared components or shared segments to the users quickly ahead of time, statically even, so that we can give those users those smooth experiences so they can get all of the content for those pages. And you don't have to necessarily think about pre-rendering or pre-generating all those pages. And perhaps if you're thinking about pre-generation, you can think about these are the pages I'm guaranteed or must be really important for us to load ahead of time, leveraging things like your analytics data to find like the top 100 products or top 100 blog posts. Let's pre-render those ahead of time. And everything else, let's just let it load dynamically. So trying to expand the footprint of how much we can leverage those pieces, I think is going to become really interesting.
Very cool. So is partial pre-rendering ready for prime time right now? Is it ready for production or is it still in the experimental stages?
Yeah, so at this time, we're still sussing out some edge cases and we're trying to establish and improve a lot of the APIs. We're, you know, at Vercel, we're testing a lot of these tools internally before we're shipping it to everyone to utilize. And I think that's where we're really trying to make that experience as smooth as possible for users. So I'd say that at the moment, it's still an experimental. It still requires the canary release in order for you to utilize it in Next.js and an experimental flag to enable. And we're trying to be really cautious because we don't want to toss this up to the wind and have users have a poor experience when it comes to a lot of those edge conditions. Because you can imagine a developer application uses a lot of APIs, uses a lot of interesting libraries, that there's going to be a lot of conditions that haven't been covered. And we want to make sure that it's a smooth experience for users overall.
Fair enough. So if devs do want to try it out, they want to put it in their toy app or they want to put it in their non-production version, are there any resources that you would recommend to help them get started, or any tutorials, blog posts, anything like that you would point towards?
Yeah, we have a few docs on partial pre-rendering and some coming later. But if devs want to learn, we have a course that goes through the whole app router model and includes a chapter on partial pre-rendering that they can try out. So I do recommend that for anyone who's new to Next.js and just trying it out, because it will take you through the main features. But like Wyatt said, because it's still very much experimental at the moment, more resources will come as we near stability.
Subject to change. Delba and Wyatt, where can people get in touch with you if they want to talk more about partial pre-rendering or Next.js, or just learn more about you two online?
Yeah. If you want to reach out to us directly, Twitter is probably the best place. But I would recommend checking out the Next.js GitHub, because there are discussions there on partial pre-rendering and people asking about best partner patterns and how to use it. So I do recommend checking out the community on GitHub. We also have Reddit, where people ask questions. So again, for all the Redditors out there, feel free to use our Next.js subthread. But yeah, I hope that should be enough, and our DMs are open, I suppose.
Fantastic. Thank you both again for coming on the podcast today. It's been great to talk to you and hear more about how Next.js continues to push React forward.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.